Hello, everybody from the nation's capital. Welcome to an episode of the Politatine Podcast. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Max Kalman.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
Yes, and today we have a very interesting episode. Some might say an unprecedented episode. It's honestly kind of funny.
I mean, it is an unprecedented episode.
Yeah, it's completely unprecedented. So for those of you that may be unfamiliar with exactly what we're alluding to, Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, has been ousted.
Got fired,
bro, lost his job. Oh, man.
You got hit with the Trump clip.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You think Trump...
You're fired.
Yeah, you're fired. Whatever he does. But yeah, no, Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy is officially the shortest serving speaker in United States history.
Yeah.
A lot of interesting. Where do we want to start?
I mean, I think probably first, we just need to go over how unprecedented this is.
Yeah.
There was one vote to do this way back in 1910.
Yeah.
But it didn't go through.
Yeah.
This is the first time a speaker has ever been actually fired.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially considering it came from a civil war within his own party, which is something that we're going to get into a lot in this episode. Because obviously this was precipitated by a lot of divisions in the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Primarily from, some would call it, the extremist wing of the party.
Yeah.
I mean, as we all know, this movement was largely headed by Matt Gaetz.
Yeah.
Our favorite congressman.
Yes, from Florida. The congressman from Florida now has 50 minutes to speak about some wild stuff. That's been the theme over the past couple days. But I guess we'll start there. We'll start with the rupture of the Republican Party. Because this is, if anyone that's listening right now has been a long-term listener of the Politatine podcast, you guys may remember a couple years ago during the 2020 election, I had a very hot take, a take that wasn't received well by my co-host at the time.
Yeah.
That was essentially saying that 2016 might be the last time that a Republican president.
Mm.
And everyone thought that I was crazy for having that take back then. But as time has gone on, we realized that maybe, you know, Damian of yesterday wasn't absolutely tripping. But let's start with...
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't hate that take. Largely because, as well, I mean, we're seeing the fact that Republicans are lost right now because they've consistently relied on older generation of voters when obviously they, in order to maintain their voter base, as the older generation dies, they need to start appealing to the younger generation who's first coming in and are going to be voting in their first election.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, I think that can almost be cited as one of the largest reasons for this division we've seen in the Republican Party, because people are caught kind of between appealing to the older, I guess you could say almost more prunish conservatives versus people who are trying to be a little bit more of a firebrand, appeal to the younger generation with honestly a lot more extreme ideas and policies.
Yeah, I think that to get to where we are today, we have to go back 11 years to the election of 2012, Obama versus Mitt Romney. And at that point, I'd feel comfortable saying that we start to see, but we can not predict what we've come to today, but we can start to see it, right? You have Mitt Romney essentially being the last, I would like to say, Bush era Republican, if that would be fair. You know, these fiscally conservative Republicans that are socially conservative as well, you know, they go against issues such as abortion, same-sex marriage, the legalization of marijuana, and essentially just upholding traditional social values. And Mitt Romney does a very good job of doing that during this election. Obviously, he's going against an incumbent president. It's very difficult. But then Mitt Romney loses. And I think that that's the catalyst that starts this rupture of the Republican Party. They see that, okay, we just had... Actually, you know what? Maybe you can even take it back to 2008, right? Because this gets into more controversial takes. But you have a black president, a mixed president, technically. He's half black, but still, that's more than enough for Republicans to make a big complaint about it. But you have a black president elected.
Yeah.
And you have a black president elected, then you have... gay rights pass, then you have the Affordable Care Act pass, and Republicans are like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And instead of, I think, realizing that, hey, maybe it's time for a shift towards more, even I would say, a libertarian standpoint, which I think would have been the counter to what we're seeing now, like a transition towards like socially liberal Republicans that are still fiscally conservative, still uphold the institutions that we currently abide under. But like,
yeah, I mean, I think ironically what you're seeing is, I will disagree a little bit with that take, okay, in the sense that I think Republicans nowadays, in terms of the policies that they support and the stances they actually take, do not look that different than like the Bush era Republicans. Mm. They support a lot of the same issues. They're all still anti-abortion. They all still want to repeal gay marriage. And I think in...
But you're talking about older Republicans, though. You're talking about the base.
Well, even Matt Gaetz. Like, Matt Gaetz is anti-abortion. He's very staunchly... And like, the far right wing also, I would say, might even lean a little more heavily into the social issues and into the social conservatism.
Oh, 100%.
They just don't take it from the same...
Well, that, yeah.
That stance, I guess, as the older ones do. Because I think a lot of it, too, has to do with the rhetoric. They're a lot more willing to basically just look at a Democrat and say, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And actually just call them like, oh my God, you're a pedophile. You're this, you're that. Ironic coming from Matt Gaetz.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think in a...
True. Crazy. Allegedly.
Don't sue us.
Yeah. Do not sue us. We do not have anything to pay you, but we will work as teenage interns on your staff. but no, that's the larger point that I was trying to make here, because the counter to the type of Republican that we're seeing now would be a libertarian, at least ideologically. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what we see is, we see Mitt Romney lose in 2012, and then we see what I would like to say is the first take that transitions us to the point where we are, which is the Obama birther stuff, where Trump comes out and a bunch of people come out and they're like, Obama was born in Kenya. He's not a U.S. citizen. We want to see his birth certificate. And at that point, it was over. And something that I've been thinking about and reflecting on more recently is the White House Correspondents' Dinner, where Obama plays the clip from Lion King, and he's like, "I have a birth of my, I have my video of a bee being born," and it just it feeds into this, and he acknowledges Donald Trump too, and he gives him
also says he'd never be president.
Yeah,
which low key, like the edits of like Obama saying that and then showing Trump in the White House, they go kind of hard.
Yeah, no, and but I think that was the point where the Republican Party switched.
Yeah,
where definitely. They just became this party of conspiracy theorists, because that's obviously the Republican Party has engaged in believing conspiracy theories before, I think, but they haven't been a party of conspiracy theorists. I'm trying to think if I'm wrong on this day. Can you?
I think not to the extent that they are now.
Yes.
And I also think, again, I think it's a bit of a rhetorical shift from caring more about seeming like a proper person. And seeming, because I think that's also kind of what defines the Bush era of Republicans, is the fact that they want to seem like they're more proper. They're more a traditional American. You know, they're trying to play as if they're a man in the 1950s. Mm. And I think the modern Republicans have stopped caring about that.
Sure.
I think they care a lot more about, you know, getting the clips, getting the crazy headlines. And I think they're willing to play the rhetorical game of, you know, the conspiracy theory stuff, to a way greater extent than anyone has ever done before.
Yeah, and I think the Trump campaign also does that shift for the Republican Party as well, because for a very long time, I'm trying to think of the way that I can structure this. For a very long time, the people that were getting into Republican politics were, yes, products of nepotism, often, more so than at least Democratic candidates.
Yeah, speaking of the Bush era.
Yeah, speaking of the Bush era, obviously. But what happens is, I think that with the Trump candidacy, you see this opportunity that a lot of conservatives didn't see before, which is, hey, we can get clouded. Yeah. We can get clout. Like, if we run for office, we don't actually have to do anything. We can just be famous. So now you have people like Vivek Ramaswamy running for office, and Vivek,
total clout chaser,
and Vivek's more popular than fucking Mike Pence.
Yeah, which is hilarious.
Which is like ridiculous to think about, because that is the Bush era Republican. That is the guy that you look at. That's the guy that had gay conversion therapy like as his policy when he was governor of Indiana, right? And it's just been interesting. I think that the Trump presidency in 2016 opens those. They open the doors to say, hey, you know what? We can chase clout. Hey, beyond chasing clout, we can also peddle conspiracy theories. And it gets interesting from that point on. And that's where I think you see the main point of contention that led us to where we are, which is Trumpism.
Yeah.
You have the term that I kind of like from a rhetorical perspective, MAGA Republicans versus Republicans.
Yeah.
I think that it's decent. I think that it's good because you're not just calling them like Trump Republicans or Trump loving Republicans. It's MAGA Republicans, right?
Yeah, because honestly, I think part of it too has to do with more so than what Trumpism really describes is just populism. Trump didn't really invent this. You know, sure. you can look at contemporary examples in Italy and in the UK. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of what it has to do is that now Republicans are willing to step away from the traditional conservatism, which has to do with like appearing like a conservative guy. Like Marjorie Taylor Greene does not appear like a conservative woman. You know, she had this huge scandal the other a few weeks ago. Did you hear about this?
No.
Where she was caught. Oh, my God. She was caught at a theater and she got kicked out for like being like too much PDA with her boyfriend.
Really?
And for like vaping in the theater. Yeah.
She got kicked out for vaping in the theater.
Yeah. And for like having too much PDA.
Did
and there's
I tell
like videos
you
from it.
That you know that Marjorie Taylor Greene is from the place where I grew up. Have I ever
what?
Told you this? Yeah. She went to the high school that I would have gone to.
No
yeah.
way.
Yeah,
are you serious?
She's from the county right above where I'm from.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. She's an alumni of, I won't dox the school, but you can Google it, I guess.
Yeah.
She's an alumni of a school there in the county, which is just kind of
damn,
funny.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But no, I mean,
because like they're just willing to step away from like the pearl clutching of the old Republicans who are like, yeah. How dare you yeah. say anything that has to do with gay people?
Yeah.
Or
how dare you kiss your boyfriend?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, how dare you actually be like kind of cool at a theater?
Yeah.
And they're just willing to just be more brazen about it, you know, like throw their balls on the table a little bit and just be like, this is what's up.
Yeah.
Because they're, again, trying to appeal to the younger generation who doesn't care anymore about yeah. any of those, like, you know, you could call them standards of conduct or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And you also get this, when Trump goes down that escalator in 2015, you get this new taste of what it means to be a Republican, a speak your mind type of Republicanism, which I think is really interesting. And I'd love to go into this a little bit more because previously I think that conservatives in the United States have utilized dog whistles extremely effectively and that they've been able to get around, you know, okay, we don't hate Mexicans. We just want to secure our borders. Okay, we don't hate gay people. We just believe in the nuclear family and that's the best thing for. But like Trump goes down the escalator and he's like, when Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. Like
they're sending rapists,
yeah, they're sending
and criminals,
and drug dealers,
like, yeah.
yeah, and it's just like he just takes the Band-Aid off, and he's like, "Look, no more dog whistle. Here's a bullhorn."
Yeah,
and I think that that grows the confidence that other individuals have, and it really speaks to a sector of Americans that feel lost in the things that the federal government is doing for them and that their state governments are doing to them, and it gives them a scapegoat. Which is something that we've historically seen be very dangerous, obviously, but it's kind of interesting how even fascism has been Americanized. Like we're doing fascism in the most American way possible, which is like we're yossifying fascism. We're just making it about like cute little conspiracy theories
yeah.
about how like QAnon and like if you listen to what Trump says backwards at 2 speed at 1:54 p.m. when the sun is at this angle, you'll realize that he's gonna come back into office in 40 days and like
yeah, that he's gonna get assassinated and then come and then rise
yeah,
from the dead
yeah,
3 days
yeah,
later
yeah, yeah. Like the Phoenix, he will take over the presidency or whatever.
Yo, how many takes from like Republicans have you heard that like Trump is literally the second coming of Christ?
Oh,
that like he's actually just like the earthly representation of
yeah,
Jesus
a lot,
Christ.
A lot. Which like to be fair, like not even other fascist regimes did that.
Yeah,
like yeah. not even other fascist regimes were like, no, like I'm Christ, I'm God himself. Like
yeah,
they even had the decency to be like, ah, we'll show that. Yeah, but like. The way that it's been done with
yeah.
this has
oh,
been
yeah,
wild.
Unprecedented.
But okay, so getting back to the point at hand here,
yeah,
all of these people, individuals, also combine and mix in with the media apparatus.
Oh, entirely. And I think something else that defines this generation is they're willing to play the media game.
Exactly.
And what I mean by that as well is that, like, traditional and, like, mainstream media, you know, like CNN, Fox News, etc. Yeah, they all follow the same format. Mm-hmm. They all follow the same formulas. They cover stories in the same way.
Yeah.
And, you know, traditionally, they, you know, if you think about it, think about New York Times and think about before 2016, they almost never printed the word lie or liar. Because they were never willing to question the establishment and politicians on what they were actually saying. Because they're the predominant sources for a lot of the things that they write. And when you look at Republicans now, they're willing to use that to their advantage, which is what Trump did. Because, you know, if he throws out so many statements that are false and that need to be fact-checked and he flip-flops on his policies all the time, they literally just don't have enough space in their coverage to cover every single thing.
Yeah.
And when they do, it becomes the fact that they're covering Trump all the time,
yep.
which is what you saw.
Yep.
And they're also, you know, and Trump is willing to spin the narrative on it of like, okay, well, if I'm saying all these things and I'm saying they're true and the media is saying that all these things aren't true, well, I guess the media is just lying.
Yeah, the media is lying.
Yeah, they're just bullshitting.
Yeah.
And they're willing to play that game so effectively and so well. Like, think about the amount of coverage that Matt Gaetz has gotten in the past couple of days.
Yeah.
Because they're willing to do the things that no one would do before and use the, you know, any publicity is good publicity to their advantage. You know, we were looking at Google Trends earlier.
Yeah.
And Matt Gaetz's searches have spiked two times recently.
Yeah. Yeah.
First, when he delayed McCarthy becoming speaker for 15 votes.
Yeah.
And now when he ousted McCarthy as speaker.
Yep. So he knows that. He knows
100%.
That. We cannot be ignorant to this matter. He knows that. His staffers know that. His campaign manager knows that. And he understands how in his district, it's going to win him elections for years to come.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And it just, it also puts his name out there in a way that it hasn't really been put out before.
Well, that's the thing, too, with the 2016 presidency of Donald Trump, the win. He won because of CNN. He won of MSNBC. He won because they would not stop talking about him and covering him.
Yeah, they couldn't stop covering him. Yeah. And that's how he played it so effectively.
No, and
to a point where they couldn't turn away from him or their ratings would go
down.
He just played the game so effectively.
Yeah.
And he just learned the way in which they cover stories and just made it so he was the only thing they covered.
Yeah, we're giving him a lot of credit here. But nevertheless.
But to be honest, in that respect, he deserves it.
No, I think he does. That's what I was going to get at. I think he does deserve it. And whether. Now the question is, was it willingly? Like, did he actually sit down one day and he was like, this is the algorithm that CNN is using? And
what I will say is the one thing that Trump actually is and has a history of doing is he's a media personality.
Sure, yeah.
That's what he's always done.
Yeah.
And he's always been involved. You know, he had his old show, you know, where all the You're Fired bits came from. Yeah, exactly. And so if there's one thing that Trump is actually an expert on, it's not being a politician and it's not really playing politics. It's playing the media. And it's playing the coverage of it. And it's playing these, like, large broadcast channels who just can't turn away.
Yeah.
For the life of them, they can't turn away.
Yeah.
Well, because otherwise their ratings will go down. And, yeah, exactly.
And when you lose ratings, you lose sponsorships. And when you lose sponsorships, you make less money. So the profit incentive incentivizes these corporations to continue covering something that is harmful for the American people and that the vast majority of American people know and acknowledge and agree is harmful for them. The vast majority of Americans, just like the vast majority of members of Congress, did not support the ousting of Speaker McCarthy. I didn't support it. I didn't support it. I didn't support it in the sense where it's like, it's bad for the institution. I obviously supported it because, like, it's funny and, like, we do
we get some great clips out of it.
this goes back to, which so when we stopped filming Politine in 2020, or it was like 2021 that we technically stopped filming it, one thing that I think greatly contributed to it was the victory of Joe Biden. The reason we stopped filming. Because what do you talk about? You're going to talk about how his dog bit someone else?
Yeah, exactly. Like, or how, like, he fell over on his bike. Yeah. Like, that's great for one clip.
Yeah, exactly.
But Trump, every single day,
bangers.
He
would give us content. Dude, he was going to buy Greenland. He was just doing
I forgot about that.
Yeah, dude, I promise I won't do this to you, Greenland. And it's a picture of Greenland covered with Trump towers. He was just a content machine. And I thought it was gone. I thought we'd never get that again. But here we are. And we get to point and laugh at Matt Gaetz.
And it's great.
Great. But it's terrible for the American people.
Oh my God,
it genuinely is.
Yeah.
It's one of these things where we love it and we even understand we're speaking to you guys from the media perspective. We are the media.
Yeah.
We understand what Matt Gaetz has our name in, or his name in our mouths right now. We can't turn, we
wouldn't not cover this if we wanted to.
Exactly. We have to cover
it. But I love covering it.
No, you know,
it's so much fun.
Yeah, I do too. But you know, the difference is that we do just acknowledge it. We just talk, we talk about the fact that like we know what he's doing and damn, is he good at it? And Marjorie Taylor Greene does the same thing. Like, go ask the vast majority of United States citizens to name 5 members of Congress, of the House of Representatives, and they will name probably Marjorie Taylor Greene, AOC, Matt Gaetz, Kevin McCarthy, and
maybe. And they'll probably throw Mitch McConnell in there because they don't know.
Yeah, they don't know the difference between Senate and House of Representatives. But like, still, just thinking about. Think about the amount of times, and I'd love to see this. We'll do this with Google Trends, maybe on a future episode, but just looking at the popularity of Matt Gaetz versus AOC versus Marjorie Taylor Greene, like looking at what are referred to as Republican extremists and what are referred to as Democrat extremists. Because I guarantee you one thing, the Republican extremists are a lot more well-known. I won't say popular, but they're a lot more well-known than figures like AOC and whatnot. Because they're just not controversial. They just don't get media coverage. They don't play into the game the way that Matt Gaetz understands that you can play into the game. The way that, and that's, I unironically think that that's why what's his name? Ron DeSantis is failing. Because he's not playing the media game.
Yeah.
He's sitting up there in the debates and he's letting everyone talk and he gets asked the most questions. And the only reason that he talks the most during these debates is because he gets asked the most. But he's not going up there and saying anything controversial. He's walking the line.
Yeah.
He's up there looking pretty with his suit. He doesn't take shots at anyone. He just chills. And that's not how the media works anymore. We're away from that. And it led to the ousting of Speaker McCarthy. You have extremists, literally a small percentage of the House of Representatives.
Yeah, 90, not only, the tiniest percentage of the House of Representatives, but 95% of the Republican Party, more than 95% of the Republican Party, voted to keep McCarthy as Speaker. And so it was such a small faction that was able to throw their weight around to actually get things done. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be totally counterintuitive to their vision because they're never going to get people to agree on a current speaker.
Yeah.
And that's what I think we're going to get into a little bit more as we go on. But just one more thing on the previous topic. You know, we could see a similar division arising in the Democratic Party, but figures like Nancy Pelosi and now Hakeem Jeffries were able to bring in these so-called Democratic extremists and the progressives on the, you know, on the far left of the House, and they were able to fold them into the Democratic Party and fold them into the establishment. Yeah. Nowadays, you don't see them voting out of line with the establishment types.
Yeah.
And, you know, no matter what their rhetoric is, at the end of the day, they're voting with Hakeem Jeffries. They're voting with Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, I think the fact that the Republican Party has not been able to do that is telling to the fact that, you know, we're starting to see a genuine collapse of the Republican Party.
No, yeah, 100% starting to see that collapse. And I think that that collapse is even represented with what we should get into next, which is the individuals that are potential candidates for Speaker.
Yep.
So we have Steve Scalise and Jim Jordan. And I might have these mixed up, but Steve Scalise is a strong ally of McCarthy. He supports him. He's good friends with him. He's the candidate that I think McCarthy, he's the second most powerful in the House of Representatives. And he's the candidate that I think that most Republicans would want to see be Speaker, if not McCarthy, which it's not going to be because obviously he's not going to throw his name in the race. But besides McCarthy, I think Steve Scalise is the main choice. Mm-hmm. But then we also have Jim Jordan.
Yeah.
Now, Jim Jordan is a strong Trump ally.
Yeah.
And
also apparently was a mentor of Matt Gaetz when Matt Gaetz first came into the House.
Yes.
Which is super interesting as well because, you know, both of these figures did not vote to oust McCarthy. Neither of them did. And what I think is interesting is my personal pick is that I do think it will likely be Jim Jordan. I think it's going to be all over the place.
Yeah.
But I think if it were to be anyone, it would be Jim Jordan, just because he does have that connection to Matt Gaetz. And in terms of his rhetoric and his policy, he's entirely in line with Matt Gaetz and you could say the MAGA wing of the Republican Party. But again, he also was friendly with McCarthy. Yes. You know, he wasn't antagonistic towards him. He voted to keep him in. And I think that's what might leave a lot of the more traditional conservatives to supporting him as well.
Yeah.
But I do not think Scalise in a million years is going to get the support of Matt Gaetz, et cetera, et al.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think, you know, at the end of the day, he's just McCarthy part two.
Yeah. And yeah.
Jim Jordan, I think, kind of has the ability to bridge that gap more than anyone else. And if it's not Jim Jordan, I think the Republican Party's fucked. I think they'll be in a battle to figure out who it's going to be until the next election.
Yeah, I think for a long time as well. I think this nomination process is supposed to begin October 11th, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, so what realistically should be this battle between Steve Scalise and Jim Jordan. However, we do have another name thrown into the mix. And this was a name that was obviously brought up as well the last time. And that we also can't get into avoiding. Donald J. Trump will serve as Speaker of the House.
That's right.
That's right. That's my pick for Speaker of the House. If I was in the House of Representatives, Donald John Trump has my vote.
Oh my God, I would totally vote for him.
No, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh no, my God. Unironically, totally. Oh my God. That shit would be so funny because it'd just be torturous for him. Because, like, he actually has to know the procedures. Like, yeah. he actually has to know things.
Because the Speaker position, it's A, of course, one of immense leadership and power, but also it's one that's very technical. There's a lot of technicalities. Technical. They're the people who run the proceedings, they decide how the votes work, they decide what they're going to vote on. And, you know, in conjunction with a number of other officials, you know, like the whip and, you know, they have to be in accordance with the parliamentarian, et cetera, et cetera. At the end of the day, it's a very technical position. You need to know a lot about procedure. You need to be very well versed in the House, which is something that I think would literally drive Trump insane.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, no. You made a point to me earlier that Trump being the president, the president's number one job is delegating all the dirty work to other people executive. Yeah. They don't actually do anything. They make the big decisions and then tell other people to go execute them.
Yeah.
And this would almost be the exact opposite.
Yeah.
You have to make the big decisions and you have to be the one to
get
the technical, correct execution of it.
All in line with you. That's why, again, I personally have a bit of disdain for Nancy Pelosi. I think that most of Americans do, right? Hot take.
No, but Nancy Pelosi.
Damn, was she fucking good. She was a good whip.
Oh my God. She could. She would literally whip the rest of the party in line.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, 5 years from now it comes out that she would just, like, walk around with a whip. Literally just, like, in the back room. Just snapping with a fly swatter. AOC would say something like, hey, maybe we shouldn't fund his...
Yeah.
Literally,
that must be. You can see AOC, like, low-key at some points, like, quivering on the House floor because she wanted to clearly vote against something, and then Nancy Pelosi just, like, ditched her in line.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
It was just 100%. Ridiculous.
But, again, she did it, and she was good at it, and it's very difficult because apparently she wasn't just like that with members. She was like that with the lobbyists.
The lobbyists
would come in, and they'd be like, hey, we want this, and she'd be like, shut the fuck up. This is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Which is just like, oh. Like, I don't know. Nancy Pelosi telling me to shut up. I'd shut up. I would not speak.
Yeah.
Like, she is a very intimidating woman. And I don't.
Because also, she's besties with all the people who have all the power.
Yes.
You know, she was tight with all the lobbyists.
Yes.
And was able to just bitch around anyone who disagreed with her. Because she was just that person. She represented the establishment of the Democratic Party more than anyone else could.
Yeah.
And, you know, she knew how to throw that weight around that, like, Kevin McCarthy clearly doesn't. Because, you know, they faced very similar situations. You know, you had the squad in the Democratic Party back then who was trying to do some, you know, more, you could say, leftist things and push their own agenda. And Nancy Pelosi was able to just get them to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
But when you see that happen on the right, McCarthy gets ousted and kicked out.
Yeah.
So I think that shows a huge division. But I mean, back to the Trump being speaker.
You look at this. He had an interview with Wayne Allen Root, who's a conservative talk show host,
mm-hmm.
and Root says this is an idea that they're throwing around, which is just so funny because I also see. Do you remember Tim Pool's take in the 2020 election?
No, I can't say I do.
He was like Republican
beanie guy. You
no,
mean?
I swear to God. Yes, Tim Pool beanie skate bro.
Yeah, yeah.
Swear to God, to my mother. His take was that Republicans were going to win every state. Unironic, that was his actual take. He thought that Republicans were going to win every state and it was going to be the largest electoral college victory in United States history, and that Donald Trump was going to fucking sweep and that Joe Biden was just going to get pooped on. But an even similarly funny take is what Root has to say here. He says, why not, instead of just waiting for 2024, and I'm hoping you run in 2024, but why not run in 2022 for the United States Congress? A House seat in Florida, win big, lead us to a dramatic landslide victory, taking the House by 50 seats, and then you become Speaker of the House. Trump responds, you know, it's very interesting. That's so interesting. And people have said, run for Senate. Okay, run for, why does he talk like this? Reading, seeing what he says written out is
hilarious.
You can only
read it in a Trump voice. You have to.
No, I can't do it.
No, you have to try, though.
You know, it's very interesting. That's so interesting. And people said, run for Senate. Okay, run for Senate. But you know what? Your idea might be better. It's very interesting. Very interesting, folks.
Oh my God. I love it too, because he's always says like, oh yeah, you have great ideas. And then he'll just not do that.
Yeah. No.
He says that in every interview. It's great.
This is funny, because like, what the delusion, the audacity to be this delusional that you're going to win the House by 50 seats.
Ridiculous. I mean, it was such a meme.
Last time that the House had a 50 seat majority? Have they ever?
From probably either party? Never. Oh, no. FDR definitely had some crazy majorities.
You think so?
Oh, I know so.
Yeah.
FDR at one point had like 90%.
Let me see. Majorities. Cool, but keep talking.
But yeah, I think part of it too is that, like, you know, the red wave bit, you know, back for the 2022 House election was a huge thing. Everyone was convinced that the House was going to have some ridiculous majority. And to be fair, it wasn't just Tim Pool. I mean, Tim Pool was probably the only person to say they would win every seat.
Yeah.
But like, you know, there were a lot of
people said that they were going to win every state, not seat. They were going to win every state.
Yeah, no, that's fucking ridiculous. But
they were going to win every single state Donald Trump was going to win, and he was going to become president in the largest landslide. But to the previous point, the largest House majority was in 1964. It was 140 seats, which is pretty ridiculous.
140 seats.
It was 67.82% Democrats to 32.18% Republicans.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and then they...
Who was that under?
Would have been either 64. Kennedy or Johnson.
Yeah,
it'd be Johnson. But I mean, it's just, this is an insane development, and I'd love to see Donald Trump be the Speaker. I think it would be very, very funny, and the fact that he's entertaining. So well, he does have a, apparently he is planning on visiting. He is planning on going to the House to meet with House Republicans.
I'm getting so excited! I can't wait,
dude. It's like a reality TV show.
It is.
This is how I feel like when girls watch The Bachelor. Like, this is probably the same level of excitement that we're getting as nerds. They probably get when they're like, who's going to get the rose? Who's going to get speakered?
Like, such nerds.
Get nominated.
Yeah.
Like, this is interesting. Actually,
and you want to know the funniest part of all of it?
Go for it.
It doesn't matter.
None of it matters.
Because the Democrats have the Senate. No matter, even if they pass the most extreme bill ever in the House and they get a speaker to get every other like moderate Republican behind, like, you know, the craziest bill you could ever think of, it's just going to get shot down in the Senate and then vetoed by Joe Biden.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter even the slightest bit.
Yeah.
Because by the time we get the next president, we're going to have a whole new House anyways.
Yeah. Even if it does get passed, it just gets vetoed by the president.
Yeah, entirely. Yeah. Even if it somehow passes the Senate. Which it won.
Yeah.
It's going to get vetoed by Joe Biden.
Yeah.
He's going to put that little bing, bing, veto stamp on it.
No.
And then all of this crazy effort, which is why at this point, it genuinely doesn't matter even in the slightest bit, simply because of the fact that Joe Biden has veto power.
Yeah.
And no, so, no, you know, no matter.
No, it does matter, though. It does matter, though. And this is the point that we're going to end on. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how this is a victory for progressives. Because it is. It is. What's your take on how this is? Because we were discussing it earlier, and I know that you weren't 100% sure on how. What do you think, though? I'll tell you my take. What do you think?
You know, that's an interesting point. I think in some ways, it is a victory for progressives in the sense that it's a collapse for the Republicans.
Mm.
Because I think the Republican Party is showing signs of cracking. And at some point, it's going to break fully. And, you know, it's only a matter of time. Our generation is significantly more progressive than the generations before us, even at our age.
Yeah.
You know, the conservative theory that you always get conservative when you're older does not seem to be holding out.
No, on the contrary.
Yes.
On the contrary. Actually, with our generation, the trend has been that you get more progressive as you're older.
Yeah.
And that's because usually, like, before, you'd have to pay taxes and this and the other. now you have to pay taxes, but you don't have enough money to pay your taxes. You have to pay your mortgage, but you don't have enough money to pay your mortgage. It was nice to be a Republican in 1950 because the corporate income tax rate was 92%.
Yeah.
But now it's like 25%.
Yeah.
And that just happened. And 0% for Amazon and 0% for Microsoft.
Yeah, except for the outside of the bill that Joe Biden passed, actually.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things, too, was that he mandatory minimum corporate tax rate. Because literally for like 40 corporations, the corporate tax rate was zero.
Hold on, I gotta
like all their employees are getting taxed like 40% and they were getting taxed $0.00. Uh-huh. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it's been absolutely ridiculous. But I got a clip for it. Ready?
You do?
Yeah.
Right now. Yup.
Base Biden. Let's go. Fasten that income tax rate.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I've been curious to hear your take. And honestly, I've been saving to ask you about this for the podcast. But how do you see this whole debacle boosting progressives?
So I think that there's multiple ways that it's going to benefit progressives, but I think that first and foremost it's from the angle that you're talking. I think that the Republican Party, and this is again I try to take the most bipartisan analysis to it, because I understand that I have a bias, and that's a big thing that we've reinforced here on Politidine. Originally when we started Politidine, we were like, okay, we're going to be moderate commentators, we're going to just tell the news as it is, this, that, or the other. But one thing that you realize when you get into this industry is that you can't.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Instead of doing that, what we did was we're just going to openly state our biases.
Yeah.
And that's better than trying to hide them and trying to be Jake Tapper and this, that, and the other. But again, trying to be as impartial as I can, I think it's a major victory for progressives, because the Republican Party is going to collapse.
Entirely.
It will collapse.
They're reliant on a generation of voters who's about to die.
The only thing holding them together ideologically are their policy matters, and that has failed to hold them together. Think about it. What do Matt Gaetz and McCarthy disagree on? Like, ideologically. Gay marriage? No. Trans issues? No. Fiscal conservatism? No. The fight against socialism? No. Gay rights? No. They agree on every single substantive policy matter, yet McCarthy is no longer speaker.
And they hate each other.
Yeah. And they hate each other. Whereas the issue with Democrats and progressives historically has been, you're not progressive enough. You're not good. You're not good enough. You're not doing good enough. You're not woke enough. And it's a very difficult when you're doing the negative. It's a lot, right? The progressive infighting, which I think also is something that we benefit from with this exchange. We get to see how ridiculous progressives looked in years past.
Mm-hmm.
We get to acknowledge and we get to be like, damn, we were almost them. Because if you go to 2018, if you go to 2016... we looked like the Republican.
Yeah.
We 100%. Entirely. The Progressive Caucus was getting, every single time you were talking about, oh, the Progressive Caucus. Go back to CNN, watch CNN from 2017, let's say. The Progressive Caucus. They had AOC on all the time. Oh, the Progressive Caucus. The Progressive Caucus is doing this. They're doing that. They're doing the other. They seem ridiculous. This, and then we saw actual ridiculousness. And we were like, oh my God. These people are insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a major victory, because it shows you that ideologically you have a lot more to fear than whether you're going to post a, I made this joke last time, but whether you're going to post a black square on your Instagram account for Blackout Tuesday to stand in solidarity with Black Lives Matter, or whether you're going to see a literal fascist takeover of the government from people that don't understand the procedural implications. Because I'm one of these people that doesn't, like, I don't care. The speaker's not important. The president's not important. Like, realistically, right? They don't, what matters is what the people of the United States want. Because what the people of the United States want, when they work in unison with each other, when they stand in solidarity with each other, gets done. 1964, we look at the Civil Rights Bill. We look at, you know, the abolition of Jim Crow laws. We look at the abolition of slavery, right? It doesn't matter who's at the top. These things were brewing because the American people wanted them.
Mm.
And I think that that's a strong point for conservatives and, or sorry, for progressives. And the number one thing is that I think it ultimately will lead the collapse of the Republican Party. Because this is my prediction. I'm going to make it boldly here.
Mm-hmm.
In 2024, Donald J. Trump will lose the presidency. He will lose his bid for president of the United States. I don't know if Joe Biden will make it, but whoever the Democratic candidate is will win. Matt Gaetz and Donald Trump are going to come together and create a third party. And this might be with Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert. But these individuals, these extremist individuals, they have America, American media by the balls.
Oh, yeah.
And progressives, if they act strategically, will be able to capitalize on that and win massively. The other thing, and this is the point that we'll end on, is the fact that the infighting of conservatives does not take away from the unison or the unity that they've had when it relates to being socially conservative.
Mm.
Conservatives might be fighting with each other. They might beat the hell out of each other on the House floor. But the second an abortion ban comes up, they're voting all together. And the American people don't like that. The second that gun regulation comes to the table, they stand arm in arms. We're not going to regulate guns. 75% of Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And now they don't even like each other.
Yeah.
Now they don't even like each other. Now the conversation, I remember arguing with liberals back in the day being like, this is why AOC is better. This is why Bernie Sanders is a better alternative to the policy. And they just be like, no, Joe Biden, no, Hillary Clinton, no. But you never had, oh, I like Mitt Romney better than I like Donald Trump. And then be like, and start fighting with each other. They just be like, oh, yeah. But whoever's the president, I'm going to support.
Yeah.
The opportunity for unity that has been presented and afforded to progressives because of this is massive.
Yeah. My only fear is that establishment types like Nancy Pelosi and like Hakeem Jeffries and a wide variety of Democrats will be able to use this as an excuse to not have to actually do anything. And this is what I say would be my major fear, is that they use the right's obvious failure in a major way. Like, they're putting on a fucking clown show on the House floor.
Yeah.
And everyone who can see that.
Yeah.
My fear is that the Instead rhetoric they're going to play, as opposed to capitalizing on it to do good things, they're going to capitalize on it to just do nothing and get away with it. Because they can just entirely do that, right?
Yeah.
As long as every single Democrat shuts the fuck up, the Republican Party is going to implode. But if the Democratic Party comes out and also supports a lot of policies that we've been talking about that are extremely popular...
Extremely popular.
We will see, in my opinion, if they were to do that, which I think is probably unlikely, but I hope and pray that you're right.
And
we'll see majorities like 1964.
You want to know why? I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why, because
of... Tell me.
The Democratic strategists are Democratic strategists now of our generation. Strategists have never been old. Mm-hmm. When you talk about... That's why you have... They all become pundits when they get older. The people that work for Obama when he was running for office, they're all pundits. They don't stay in this... It's not the same as politics. The strategists now are young. And the strategists now that are young, you want to know what they did in the midterms? They helped extremist Republicans win their primary elections so that Democrats would have an easier time. That's something that gets swept under the rug, something that no one talks about, right? We talk about when we look at the 2022 midterms that the Republicans lost, not because they lost the House. They won the House, but they were supposed to win the House.
Yeah, it was the red wave bit.
They were supposed to have the red wave. But a lot of people talk about abortion. They say the abortion thing was the reason that happened. Yes, true. But what the Democrats did leading up to that election was they funded Republican extremist candidates so that when their Democratic candidate was running against an extremist, they look like the healthier option. So while the Democratic candidate was doing exactly what you're saying, which is being complacent, not necessarily engaging in any way, they still won, which is different than the Republican Party of yesteryear. Mm-hmm. It's different. They wouldn't have taken this strategy. That's an insane strategy to take.
That is an insane strategy. And it clearly backfired on them in some cases.
You think so?
Were they, I mean, well.
You think so?
I guess actually in the long term, no.
You think so?
Because
they just ousted the Speaker of the House.
Yeah, they planted
just fired
people that
their
them.
Own guy.
I mean, fair point. To your point, too, like, there are some theories that obviously are probably not true, but seem extremely plausible that Matt Gaetz is a Democrat plant. Because, like, come on. He's like a comical supervillain. He's imploding all of their chances for any actual political gains. And, you know, at the end of the day, my worry is that I haven't seen a Democratic Party in my lifetime that's willing to take a stand on actual small d Democratic issues. And what I mean by that is a lot of these extremely popular policies that we're talking about are not supported by moderate Democrats.
Mm.
And when they try and unify the party around complacency as opposed to activism, they might also start to lose the younger generation. The question is, in my opinion, the question is, can the younger generation, like you're saying, in terms of strategists, in terms of the voting base, in terms of even the people who are running, are they able to successfully take over the Democratic Party? Or is the Democratic Party going to live in an era of complacency because the Republicans are eating shit so much that they don't have to do anything?
But at a certain point, I think you eat so much shit that something ends up happening. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Something ends up happening. And yeah. I think that the Democrats might end up winning with this. Because the other thing that I've been thinking about too, and we should wrap up here. We're approaching the 50-minute mark.
Wow.
Yeah, right? It seems crazy.
It's been five.
Yeah, it feels like it's been 5-10 minutes. But AOC might have fallen in line, and I hope this is my wild, another wild theory there. AOC might have fallen in line for the sake of longevity.
I mean, entirely. You can't, obviously. You know,
so?
I don't think there's any other possibility. Because I think when you look at it, all of the progressives realized that they can take the Matt Gaetz path. And, you know, I think they probably predicted the fact that if they went against the establishment types, they would end up looking like Matt Gaetz.
Yeah, they
would have smeared all over the media.
Party.
And they, yeah, exactly. They would have imploded.
They
the
would
Democratic
have done
Party.
What happened. And that's what I'm saying. That's why it's also a win for progressives.
Mm.
That's another thing. They avoided their own shit show.
Yeah.
And that's, again, it's a principal theory of economics. Losing less money is making money.
Yeah.
If you're projected to lose $50,000, but you only lose $25,000, that's a win.
Yeah, that's a great year.
That's what happened with the Democratic Party.
Mm.
They were projected to lose $1 million, and they ended up losing $100,000. And they got fucking lucky that they only lost $100,000.
Yeah.
And they watch their business next door, and they're watching the people across the aisle, and they're seeing what losing $1 million does to you.
Yeah, entirely.
And it's not looking that good for these Republicans. And I don't know what's going to happen. I genuinely don't know what's going to happen to the Republican Party. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it will collapse.
I think it event, no matter what, whether or not this is the beginning of the end or it's going to be some other event, the Republican Party has no path to longevity.
No.
Because inherently, they cannot adapt to an increasingly progressive generation.
Astronomically progressive. And I think that technology...
Unless we see another party swap in our generation.
Yeah, which might
be
potential.
It's potential, but I think unlikely just because of the level of access to information that our generation has.
Yeah.
But regardless, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself a little bit here. I think when you look at progressives and, you know, these, you could say, extremist right-wing types in the House.
Yeah.
They've taken two totally different strategies, and all I can say is I hope that the progressive one pays off. And the other thing I can say is that clearly the Republican one has not paid off at all.
Yeah. L Republicans, L loss. I was messaging my friend the other day, and we will end on this point. We are literally hitting the 15.
I think this is the fifth time you've said we'll end on this point.
Yeah.
Let's actually end on this point.
It's so good, but yeah, we'll end on this one. I was texting my friend the other day, and I was like, you feel silly. Do you feel a little silly that your party just fired your own? Like, I don't think that Americans are processed.
Mm-mm, definitely not.
Like, actually sit down and, like, let's get a goddamn foreign exchange student. Let's sit him down right here, and let's just explain what happened, and they will lose their mind.
Oh, yeah.
They will lose their mind. They'll be like, wait, you guys, they had the majority.
Yeah.
They elected their own speaker. Mm-hmm. And this is like if the prime minister was, it's kind of similar to what happened with Boris Johnson, to be completely fair. It is kind of similar, but
yeah,
but like completely different as well, because it's just, you fired your own guy.
Yeah, like he was the one in your corner who could actually appeal to the people in the party that you'll never be able to appeal to. And you just said, fuck you.
Yeah.
And the funniest part too is that explaining to them the fact that this entire shit show that's been dominating our media cycle since it happened, and it'll continue to dominate our media cycle weeks. Yeah, until we get a new speaker, and probably even after. Long after that, is all for absolutely nothing when you look at it from a policy standpoint. This has nothing to do with any policies that'll actually affect the American people. This is like the next episode of the Kardashians.
Yeah.
We got left on a cliffhanger, and now we're waiting for season two.
Yeah, because essentially what Matt Gaetz wanted was, like, when a little kid is like, why don't you buy me a car? Like, he was asking his parents for a car, and McCarthy was like, look, dude, we cannot give you a car. You can't drive. You're not old enough to drive. We don't have the money to give you a car. We can't give you a car. But we have so much money that in 10 years, we'll buy you a car.
Yeah.
And Matt Gaetz was just like, no, I want a car now, and I'm going to kill you. Like, you're done. You're fired. You're not my parents anymore. I'm moving out. I hate
you.
He ran away from home.
Yeah.
And with him, he took a
lot. And now he's dying out in the forest.
Yeah. Literally. Along with his party.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, it's just ridiculous. But I guess we'll see what happens in the weeks to come. I think it's going
to
be.
Yeah. I think the weeks to come as well will be a very, very telling for the future of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And largely to see if they even have a future.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. You know, as a political nerd, you know, this is a great moment to live through.
Because it doesn't matter who the speaker is, but it doesn't matter if the speaker is Republican or Democrat, let me see. But what does matter is whether it's Jim Jordan or Steve Scalise.
Mm-hmm. Or Trump.
Or Donald J.
Oh!
My pick. Look, right here, we used to have a policy of not endorsing candidates on Polititeen. Endorsed. Endorsed for Speaker of the House. Donald J. Trump. Sign it right here. Damien,
have them throw it up,
Galvin,
on the website.
Boom, endorsed. I will personally contribute to the 91 felonies that you have against you, and the lawyer fees that you have. No, yeah, I'll give him another felony. But no, I'll contribute to the lawyers that he's paying. But with that being said, Max, thank you so much. This was an awesome episode.
I had a great time.
We honestly didn't even.
We went on 10 different tangents.
Yeah, but it was so good.
We had some things written down, and I think I glanced at it once.
This was the least circular episode I think I've ever recorded of any podcast. It was just so many different dogging points, but
all over the place. But it was a great time.
Yeah, no, it was an absolutely wonderful time, and we hope that all of you enjoyed listening to this as well. And if you want to find another piece of amazing content or other content that you fuck with in general, be sure to head over to oxinstitute.org. And with that being said, thank you for tuning into yet another episode of the Polititeen podcast. Goodbye.
Bye.